The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 3. Sashi Bhagi Jushin Etosham Riravin Shinyande Yampati Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shingla
till 4 a.m. doing the reading, and up till 7:20 doing the homework. Okay, so. But it's finished. Okay, we are on the subject of the two truths, which you know means the two realities, right? There's ultimate reality that almost defined us, if you could come in contact with it directly for like 20 minutes in your whole life, you could eventually reach nirvana and Buddhahood. And if you don't come in contact with that in this life, you have obviously no hope of reaching Buddhahood and no hope of nirvana also, which means that you'll never be able to get rid of your bad emotions. You'll always have anger, you'll always have jealousy, and those will make you unhappy for the rest of your life. So basically, if you don't see emptiness directly in this life, if you don't make contact with ultimate reality, higher reality in this life, you're doomed to be unhappy in this life. You can't be happy. It's impossible. Okay? That's the nature of ultimate reality. Then there's a deceptive reality that's around us. Deceptive in the sense that it looks to be one way, but it really is a different way. And as long as you live in that kind of reality, and as long as that's all that you know about, you'll be unhappy, okay? Period. Not only unhappy, but your unhappiness will cause you to do certain bad deeds that will cause you to continue to have a body like this, and you'll suffer. So it comes down to, if you see emptiness directly, you don't have to suffer anymore. If you don't, you will have to suffer. You'll be unhappy for sure. And then obviously you'll continue to have a body like this. And continue to have possessions that run away from you, and hopes and desires that run away from you, and health that runs away from you, and beauty that runs away from you, and everything else. Everything is caused by your inability to see, to make contact with ultimate reality. Tonight we're going to talk about more about the fight between Buddhist schools of ancient India that were complaining about our explanation of ultimate reality. What is ultimate reality like? And there was two big divisions in the Buddhist schools of ancient India. about what does ultimate reality mean? What is it like? Whenever there's a big fight between two Buddhist schools, you have to remember that the Buddha taught both of them. Okay? The Buddha taught the ones that are wrong, and the Buddha taught the ones that are right. Okay, so why would the Buddha go around teaching three schools that are wrong, and then three and a half really, and then teaching half a school that's right? Why would he do that? He was anticipating people in 1997 having certain wrong ideas about emptiness, you know, and he has no problem 2,500 years ago. He sees 1997 as well as he sees 500 BC. For him, today and 2,500 years from now look exactly the same. So he has no problem looking into the future and saying, okay, people in America, 1997, New York City, in the Quaker house, they're going to be having these wrong ideas about emptiness. I better teach four schools, you know, and three of them will be wrong. And then that guy will get to stand up and give an explanation of them, and then they'll understand emptiness better. You know, so really he did teach all four ideas. The three lower schools have a certain idea about emptiness, and the higher school has a different idea about emptiness. What's the lower school say? They complain about the higher school. The higher school says nothing is real, nothing is true. Nothing has a nature of its own. If you were here Friday, we did the pen, right? And I'll do it really quick, okay? First, just look at this pen. Just look at it, okay? Matap machepa means don't think about its ultimate reality, you know? Just look at it, okay? Matap machepa means you're not worried about its ultimate reality. You're just looking at a pen, okay? Now we'll start getting into its ultimate reality. But first we'll start with, now just see it. Shift your mind, shift your mode of perception, and just see it as a stick that's black and white. Don't think of it as a pen. Just look at it as a stick which is black and white. Pretend you didn't know it's a pen. It's not hard to think of it as a black and white stick, right? It's not too hard. I mean, you just kind of pretend it's just a black and white stick. And it's for your mind to shift to perceiving black and white stick is not difficult, okay? Now go back to seeing it as a pen. Concentrate on it as a pen. So, if you think about it, the only thing that's reaching your eye, the power of your eye, your sense consciousness, the only thing your eye can see is shapes and colors, okay? All your eye sees is a black and white cylinder. I'll call it stick, okay, but really it's a cylinder, okay? Your eye cannot see pen. Without your mind's participation, your eye by itself can only see colors and shapes. That's all the eyeball does. The eyeball doesn't make decisions about is this a pen or not. Okay? That's the mind. But the eye doesn't make decisions like that. Really, only information you're getting from the side of this thing, I'm not going to call it a pen, right? The only information you're getting is cylinder, black and white. Okay? The decision that it's a pen, you know, deciding that it's a pen is coming from somewhere else. Where? It's from your own mind. Because you can turn it off and you can turn it on and turn it off, right? You can turn it off and say, I'm just looking at a black and white stick. When you turn it on, you can say, I'm looking at a pen. So thinking of it as a pen is not coming from its side, it's coming from your side. That's what it means when you say the pen has no nature. This black and white stick has no nature of being a pen until what? Until you think of it as a pen. Okay? Until you decide of it as a pen. It's just a black and white stick until you decide to think of it as a pen. How did I prove it? Because you can turn it on and off. You can decide to see it as a black and white stick, and then you can decide to see it as a pen. So it's not coming from this thing's side. If the penness was coming from this thing, you would say, wait a minute, Michael, I can't think of it as a black and white stick. Every time I look at it, I think pen. You know, I can't think of it as a black and white stick, but you can. So the penness is not coming from this. It's coming from your mind. Okay, the idea that it's a pen is coming from your mind. That's all we mean when we say it has no nature. Okay, it does not have a nature of being a pen. Its penness is imputed or laid on it. It's a trip that you're laying on it. The poor thing from its side, as Serge would say, the poor thing is just a black and white stick, you know. And you're making it a pen. You're forcing it to be a pen, okay? It's not a pen from its side until you think of it as a pen from your side, because your eye cannot see pen, okay? All your eye can see is colors and shapes, okay? That's what we mean when it has no nature. Now, the lower schools come along and say, oh, by the way, Madhyamika says, okay, so this pen is like an illusion. This pen is like magic. It's like a trick. It's unreal in a way. Why? Because your mind grasps so strongly that that's a pen out there from its side. But the reality is it's just a black and white stick until your mind makes it a pen. But your mind thinks, when I put this up, you didn't think black and white stick. You thought pen. And you thought everyone that ever came in this room should see a pen. But an Eskimo or an Aborigine who comes in and sees me holding up this thing, he just thinks, wow, that's a really cool black and white stick. It's like really smooth, and it's not at all like the ones we have in Australia, you know. He doesn't think pen. If pen was coming from this, he would think pen the minute he saw it. But he doesn't. He sees two kinds of colors, and he sees a cylinder. For him, that's all it is. Okay, the penness comes from you. Okay, if it was a pen from its own side, if it was a pen by itself, if it had the nature of a pen, then any kind of animal, a bird, a dog, a cat, a roach that walked in here would see a pen. They'd say, oh, pen. You know, but they don't. You know, they see it as a life-threatening thing or a thing that pokes them or something like that. They don't see it as a pen. Okay, they don't have the karma to see it as a pen. That karma is coming from your side. It's not coming from the side of this black and white cylinder. So it's like an illusion, but your mind says, oh, it's a pen. It really is a pen, you know. And that's ignorance. The illusion is that it looks like it's a pen from its side, but the truth is that it's not a pen from its side. Okay, so the higher school says illusion. Okay, we're going to study tonight illusion, the idea of illusion. Say Gyuma. Gyuma. In Sanskrit, I believe it's Maya. I think it was the name of the Buddhist mother also. It means illusion, okay? Illusion. Okay? Illusion. By the way, if you want to be convenient, you can think of a movie as an illusion, okay? 7 years in Tibet is a Gyuma. Okay? It's just a bunch of Tibetans from New York City and other places that went to Argentina and put on these costumes. And they're just playing the Dalai Lama, and they're just playing the Dalai Lama's ministers, and the Chinese people are playing these guys, nasty guys with machine guns. And they're probably all from, you know, some diners in New York and stuff, and everybody's, like, eats the same lunch together, and the Tibetan guys, and the German guy is this American guy, and it's all a Gyuma, okay? It's all an illusion. There's not really any war going on there, and there's not really anything like that. It's a Gyuma, okay? What is it that makes a Gyuma a Gyuma? Say nangtu, dang, netu, mitumba. Nangtu, dang, netu, mitumba. Okay. Nang means appear. Nangtu means the way something appears. The way that something appears. Nangtu. Dang means and. Netsu means the way that the thing really is. In this case, ne means to exist or to be or to really is. Okay. Mitumba means
how you call it?
inconsistent. I had a good translation for it. Inconsistent. The way it appears and the way it really is are inconsistent with each other. Not the same. Okay? Yeah. Excuse me? Well, we'll talk about what nangso and naso means, okay? There's a point. Do you remember the guy standing in front of the stove and there was a pot of water, right? Just before he saw emptiness directly? Okay, July 1975. And the guy is standing there and he's looking at this pot, okay? And he's thinking, and then suddenly he sees that he's not looking at a pot. He's looking at some colors. He's looking at a round thing and a white thing and a shiny thing and a long stick black thing, because that's all the eye can see. Okay? And then he's aware that he's making a little pot in his mind. You know, that the mind is synthesizing this nice little pot, and that pot is perfect. You know, that's the pot you always thought was there. It's nice and round. It's whole. When you look at the left side, you can also see the right side. When you look at the right side, you can also see the left side. Like, it's impossible, right? But it's this nice, perfect, whole little pot. And it's like this big. And it's in the back of his mind somewhere. And then he realizes he's never been looking at a pot in his whole life. It's impossible to look at a pot. Come on. You can't see a whole pot. It's impossible. Okay? If you see the left side, you can't see the right side. If you see the right side, you can't see the left side. That's why your eye is going, you know, you look at somebody's eyeball, it's going like this. It's picking up clues. But somebody else is lying and saying, oh, it's this nice little pot, you know. You could even see the back from the front, you know. And stuff like that, you know. It's got this nice little pot in your mind, okay. It looks like the minute before, 5 minutes before, when you looked at the pot, it looked like there was a pot out there on the stove. And now suddenly, this thing is just a bunch of colors and shapes, and there's another pot that's a little picture in the back of your mind. Okay? The netsu is that. The way things really are, dependent origination. The ultimate meaning of dependent origination. The meaning of dependent origination is that all you're really seeing is some colors and shapes, and your mind is making this nice little picture, and you've been watching these pictures your whole life. Okay? And mistaking them for the pot. Okay, that's dependent origination. Okay, that's the netsu. Netsu means that's the way things really are. What's the nangso? Oh, that was 5 minutes before. The way it looked was it was out there on the pot by itself. I mean on the stove by itself. The pot was out there on the stove by itself. What's the netsu of, what's the nangso of this pen? You think I'm holding a pen in my hand. What's the netsu of this pen? I'm holding a stick that's black and white. Your mind is laying a trip on it and saying pen. And you think that anybody who came in here would also see pen, but that's, you know, that's not true. If this thing was pen from its own side, then any schmuck who walked in here, even if he's an aborigine from Australia from 500 years ago, should see pen. But they don't. They see a black and white stick. Okay? It is not from its own side. It is not self-existently a pen. But that's how it looks. So we have an illusion going on here. Okay? That's the meaning of illusion in this case. The way it really is, which is a bunch of colors that your mind is organizing into a pen, and the way it looks, oh, there's a pen out there, are not consistent with each other. They're different. Okay? And that's the meaning of illusion. Yeah? I'm sorry, what? Oh, that's another, we're going to get to that in a later class. Okay? We will get to that. They are, but that's another story. Okay? So that's the meaning of Gyuma. Okay, that's the basic meaning of Gyuma. The more profound meaning of Gyuma, okay, just so you know, is really after you see emptiness directly. There's the big illusion going on then. You came down out of the direct experience of emptiness. You know. You, by the way, you just came out of the direct perception of ultimate reality. You came down, and now again you're seeing normal reality, deceptive reality. And you get this understanding that every single thought you ever had before that was mistaken. It was fooled by the deception, deceptive reality. It was fooled by deceptive reality is called deceptive reality because of the state of mind that sees it is deceived. Okay? And then you realize that you never had a correct perception in your whole life. Okay? But there's something weird going on now. When you come down out of the direct perception of emptiness, you start seeing that thing that way again. You start seeing things exactly that way again. So then your life becomes very weird. Why? You know you're wrong. All day long, you're seeing things as existing from their side, and you know you're wrong. Can you stop it? No. The day you stop it, but is the day you reach nirvana. Okay? Stopping that is the most subtle and the final bad emotion that you ever overcome. Okay? Before that, you get rid of anger, jealousy, desire. But the most subtle one is thinking that those things exist there out on their own. And it's the one you were born with. You can't stop it easily. The day you stop it is the day you reach nirvana. Okay? It's very interesting. So it's very... That's a real illusion. To go through your whole life after seeing emptiness directly and to know that every perception you have is wrong. But you know it. Okay? That's a real illusion. Then you're aware of the illusion. Okay? Let's go back to the state of mind where you saw the illusion. Okay? You're standing in front of the pot and suddenly it dawns on you that you're not looking at a pot. Okay? Why do you think you see a pot? What's making you organize those colors and shapes into a pot? Yeah. Your karma, okay? Your own karma. Okay? If you see a nice pot, if you see a pot with your nice tea in it, and you like the pot, is it a result of good karma or bad karma? Good karma. Okay? If you see a nice pot that's helpful to you, making you a nice cup of tea, then it's good karma. If you're like angry that you're having to stand there and make tea for somebody, because you'd rather be off doing your practice, those same colors and shapes are being organized by the mind into something unpleasant, and therefore that pot is a result of bad karma. Okay? The same pot can be the result of bad karma and good karma. By the way, this is the reason we study emptiness in the first place. Okay? That pot has no nature of being a pot, and it has no nature of being a good pot or a bad pot. That's coming from your mind. If you want to live in a world of lousy pots, collect bad karma. If you want to live in a world of nice pots, collect good karma. If you want to live in a world where all the pots are filled with the nectar of immortality, and if you drink it, you will never die again or ever be unhappy again, then study compassion, bodhicitta, ultimate good deeds. And it'll be that way later. That's the whole point of studying emptiness, is to create your Buddha paradise. Okay? You create it, and then you move in. You can move out of your apartment, get rid of all that stuff, move over there. It's really possible because things are empty. Okay, it really is possible because things are empty. Yeah.
Okay, so you see the pot, you know it's going to be empty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, you're enjoying looking at the pot and you're anticipating the good tea you're going to have and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a nice tea. Then you reach out and say you spill the water on your hand and you burn your hand very badly. Then suddenly this pot is very painful. You tell me what happened. The good karma wore out. Seriously. And there's a prioritization system. It's like airplanes waiting on a runway. Seriously. Your karmas are waiting there like airplanes waiting on a runway. You can move some up and you can move others back. And you can divert some off that will never go off, they'll never fly. That's the idea of the four powers, of confession. You know, if you do a good purification, you can move some of those bad karma airplanes off to a hangar somewhere and they'll just sit there. They will never ripen. They'll like do a little hop and come back down or something. Seriously, okay? That's purification. But otherwise you've got all these good and bad karmas lined up in priority, sequence. Which one's going to ripen first, the more powerful? How is something more powerful? You did it towards a more powerful object. Or you had a more powerful mental affliction. Or you had more powerful compassion. Or whatever. So what happened in this case was two planes took off right behind each other. Okay? Like the karma for having a nice cup of tea took off first. And then suddenly landed. you know. And then the karma for having it burn you took off behind it. And that's still flying, you know. And really, and then that'll wear out. All planes come to a land, right? They either crash or they land, right? I mean, they all wear out. All karmic seeds wear out. And that's responsible for your life. If you're tired of it going like that, then stop it, you know. Stop doing that. That's responsible for the ups and downs of life. That's why everything you get that's good turns screwy. And that's why when you think things are hopeless, then something good happens. Because it's just the karmas are taking off and landing, you know. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It ripened first. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Tonight we're getting into a... Oh, by the way, so these people over here say things are an illusion because they don't have any nature of their own. For example, the pen is not a pen from its own side. It does not have a nature of being a pen. So it's unreal, okay? Now all these other three schools say, oh, Mr. Madhyamika, Mr. Middle Way, that's crazy, you know? Things are real. And Madhyamika people say, why? And they say, oh, it's really a pen because it writes. Okay? It writes. You know, you can make these little things with it. You know, if it functions, it's real. So we call them functionalists, okay? But where did the functioning come from? Your karma. Okay, I mean, why we called it unreal and why they're saying it's real are two different things. Okay? They say it's real because it works. We say it's unreal because it works. Okay, or it works because it's unreal. How's that? I'll say it again. They say, oh, Mr. Madhyamika, it's not unreal, it's real. It works. And we say, because it's unreal, it works. Got it? Is that too much on a Tuesday night? I'll do one more time. Okay. These people complain and say, don't say this pen's not real. It's real. I can write with it. And then Madhyamika comes along and says, well, it only writes because it's unreal. So what does unreal mean? Well, it looks like it's not coming from your karma, but it is coming from your karma. And that's what unreal means. Okay? It's coming from your karma. Yeah. Because it looks like it's not coming from your karma. There's an illusion here. Okay? Okay? If I said everything around you is a production of your own mind, your mind, karmic seeds in your mind are ripening and creating this whole room, it's not real. Then it's like, wow, it's not real. Does it work? Yes. Are there people sitting around you? Yes. Do they eat, sleep, poo-poo? Yes. Okay? No problem. But they're unreal. They're not what you expected. They're not what you thought they were. They are all, everyone in this room is a production of your karma. Okay, if you like them, it's a production of your good karma. If you don't like them, it's a production of your bad karma. Most minds have about 33. Any room you walk into, the human mind will say, eventually will say, I like a third of these people, I hate a third of these people, and I don't care about a third of these people. You know, it's not a function of the people. This is why people who change companies always find that the same people are waiting for them at the next company, you know? Really. You'll always find a third of the people that you like, a third that you don't, a third you don't care about, because it's not coming from them. They're not self-existent. It's imputed from your side. You're carrying the same karma in your mind that you had at your last job to your new job. Eventually, you'll find someone you don't like. Eventually, you'll find someone you do like. And eventually, you'll find a whole group of people you could care less about. And that's a function of your own mind. That's another proof of emptiness, by the way. So remember that when you quit your next job. Tonight we're going to talk about a particular one of these three schools who's trying to complain about the Madhyamika. And they're called the mind-only school. Okay? The mind-only school. Say semtam. Semtam. Semtam means mind-only. Okay? I'm going to tell you briefly why they're called mind-only, but we'll get into it in more detail later. This is going to be a long class tonight, and it's a very nasty class, and sorry, and I hope some people come back for the next class, which is not as hard. Okay? This is in the monastery where we lose a lot of the monks. We usually start with 60 in a class, and my classes end up with three people graduated. So, anyway, this is the one that does it for a lot of people. Okay. It's not that they believe that everything in the world is mind, okay? They don't think that when you sit on a chair, you're sitting on your mind, okay? I mean, many people say that's what they believe, and it's dumb. Of course they don't believe that, all right? What they do believe is that when I look at that chair or that pew, my eye and my eye consciousness, the fact that Michael Roach is standing here, and the fact that he has a mind, and the fact that he can even be aware of those colors and shapes, is coming from a karmic seed, right? There's a karmic seed ripening. And therefore, I have an eye, and I can see things. If I didn't have that karmic seed, I would be blind, okay? And people do get blind, which means that airplane also comes down, eventually. You either die or you go blind, but either way, you lose your eyes. Seriously. All karmas come back. All karmas come back to the ground. They all wear out. Okay? It's a temporary, nice condition that I can see things. Okay? The karmic seed that created my eyes and the karmic seed that created that bench are the same thing. They're called vechik. They are one thing, one substance. One karmic seed, like helping people who had eye problems, is ripening into my eye and that pew at the same time. So that's really the result of the same karma. Okay? Is the pew my mind? No. Okay? Is it like an extension of my mind? In a way. It's also ripening out of one of my consciousnesses. Okay? It's also coming from the same seed that created my mind. Okay? And in that sense, everything is mind only. But they don't think that when you're sitting on a cushion, you're sitting on your head. Okay? They don't think that. Right? That's the meaning of mind only. Now they're going to complain to the Madhyamika. Okay? They're going to say something. And here's the basic gist of it. They say to the Madhyamika, can you see the illusion? Okay? Can you see the illusion? Can you see A, the pen? B, can you see that the pen is really just colors and shapes that you're thinking of as a pen? Is it possible to see that illusion? Of course. Especially when you see the pot, just before you see emptiness directly. The morning you see emptiness directly, you will see that you're seeing an illusion. Okay? You will see it. So is it possible to see the illusion? Yes. Then they say, no. The mind-only school. They're complaining to the Madhyamika school. Okay, we're getting a little subtle tonight. And then we'll go back to a little more comfortable stuff. All right? You got to hang in there. All right? No, because it has the seeing has no nature of its own. Check this out. When the guy's standing there and he figures out that the pot is really just a picture in his mind, he's seeing that the pot is an illusion, right? That the pot that he thought was out there is an illusion. Is everything an illusion like that? According to these guys. Yeah. Every normal thing in deceptive reality is an illusion. Like that. Okay? In deceptive reality, everything is like an illusion. It looks one way, but that's not the way it really is. So it's an illusion. How does it look? It looks like it exists out there on its own. Why is it an illusion? Because that's not the way it really is. It's your mind making it that way. Okay? Now suppose one day you figure that out. What about the mind that figures it out? Is that an illusion? Yeah, because it exists. It's deceptive reality. Deceptive means it's an illusion. It fools you. Even while you're seeing that the pot is unreal, the mind that sees that is just as unreal. Got it? Okay. The mind that sees the pot is as unreal as the pot was. Because it's deceptive reality. Why? Well, simple. It's not emptiness, okay? It's not ultimate reality. If my mind was ultimate reality, I would have been out of here at age 2. You know? Because I'm aware of my mind all the time. My mind is also in that big group of things that are the lie, the illusion. Okay? Me, everything about me is there except for my emptiness. Okay? There's only one thing about me which is not a lie. There's only one thing about me that if you see it directly, the way it looks and the way it really is exactly the same, and that's emptiness. Emptiness is the only thing that looks and is exactly the same. Everything else lies. Everything else looks like it's coming from its own side, but it's not really coming from its own side. Okay? Now, mind-only people, cool, they like to talk about the mind, right? They're going to get subtle. They're saying, okay, so when you recognize this stuff, like you're sitting in this class right now, you know, you didn't understand a hell of a lot of what I said, but some of it, okay? That understanding, is that an illusion also? Think about your understanding. Is that an illusion? Yeah, because it looks like it's coming from its own side, but it's not. If you have really good karma tonight, that understanding is really clear. If you don't have such a good karma tonight, that understanding is very fuzzy. If you have even worse karma, you're bored to death and you're waiting to see if you can get out of here. You know, okay? That understanding of the illusion is not itself self-existent. It is also a result of your karma. Okay? If you have really good karma, that karma is forcing you to understand what I say tonight. If you have comme ci, comme ça karma, then it's like letting you understand half of what I'm saying. If you have lousy karma, you're like really bored. Okay? If you have excellent, excellent karma, they say when I get to this subject, you should get chills up your spine. You know, that's a sign of a real Madhyamika student. Seriously, opening lines of Chandrakirti, Master Chandrakirti, you know. If you really have a bhakchat, if you really have the kelwa, the good virtue in your heart to see emptiness directly, when I start talking about all of this stuff, you go, oh man. You know? It says, Master Chandrakirti says that. It's like, oh, tell me more, you know? Okay? So that understanding of the illusion and that understanding of the emptiness itself is also a projection. It's also just your karma going off in your mind. If you have good karma, it's clear. If you have medium karma, it's fuzzy. If you have lousy karma, you're bored to death, you didn't understand anything I said, and you're hoping the homework won't be too hard. Okay? Okay? So it's also like an illusion. So these guys say to the Madhyamika people, hey, what about that understanding of emptiness? Is that is that an illusion? Yeah, we have to say, yeah, it's like everything else. It's a projection. Well, they say, well, then, there's no illusion. Okay? There can't be any illusion. Because they think that if something is like an illusion, it can't be true, and then it can't work. Okay? Got it? Boy, it's real quiet. Okay, again. They say if something works, it's for real. Okay? If a pen works, it's for real. Okay? And if you Madhyamika people say this pen is unreal, then that means it doesn't work. Okay? Now, is the mind that understands emptiness itself real or not? No, it's not real. Oh, so it doesn't work. So there is no emptiness and there's no illusion. That's what they say. Okay? That's what they say. Got it? I'll do it one more time. Okay? The illusion, understanding the illusion, the state of mind that understands the illusion is also illusory. It also doesn't have any existence from its own side. You are creating it. Your karma is creating it. I can prove it. There's like 85 people in this room, and there's 85 different understandings of emptiness going on right now, I think. Okay? Or something approaching, okay? That proves that that understanding is coming from you and not from me or something like that, not from my words. Nagarjuna went into this long thing of why words are not self-existent either. What you understand from these noises I'm making is totally up to your karma. And if you're like autistic, it just sounds like a wah, 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 you know? Because they don't have the karma to hear the words to having any meaning. You see what I mean? It's very interesting. So, to repeat, after class, okay? Because I know you're going to have a lot, okay? Come up to me after class. We'll do that. Okay? So this person complains to the Madhyamika. Okay? We'll do it this way. The pen is unreal, right? Right. Why? Doesn't it write? No, stupid, it writes, okay? Well, if it writes, how come it's unreal? Well, because the fact that it even exists as a pen is coming from your mind and your karma. It doesn't exist out there on its own, okay? Oh, well, in that case, is your understanding of the pen's unrealness unreal or real? Like everything else, it's unreal, okay? Well, in that case, it can't work, right? I didn't say that. Oh, and because it doesn't work, it doesn't exist at all. I didn't say that. Oh, then there's no illusion at all. And you're all wrong, you know, okay? It's like that. That's the whole debate, all right? That's the whole debate. That's all they say, okay? Now, how does Madhyamika respond to them? Okay, how does Madhyamika respond to them? And it's very cool, okay? Like, sorry if anyone gets lost, all right? Just have some cookies, you'll feel better, okay? They come up to them and say, look, Mr. We'll do it this way. Mr. Mind Only, do you understand what illusion means? And they say, yeah, we understand what illusion means. It means that it looks like it's one way, but it's really a different way. Oh, well, do you have any illusions in your philosophy system, you know? Do you believe in the thing? Are there any illusions that you talk about? Yeah, we got a real serious one, you know? Well, what is it, you know? Oh, we think that when you're looking at the bench, it looks like it's not coming from the same karmic seed as your mind, as your eyeball. You know, it looks like it's out there as an external object. But it's not, because it's like you're looking at your toes. That's really your own mind seed growing over there. So in a way, you're seeing your own mind. But nobody knows, because it's like an illusion. It doesn't look like that pew is part of my own mind. It doesn't look like my mind is creating that pew and that my eye is looking at a piece of my own mind, okay? So they say, oh, well, that's what, in your system, that's what illusion means. Yeah, so we do have an illusion, okay? Well, so I guess then you could never see the illusion. Why do you say that? You know, because you complain about us that when we're looking at our illusion, the mind itself must not exist, because the illusion doesn't exist. You cannot have a subject mind without an object. Okay? That's principle of Buddhism. You have to understand that. Okay? If there's no pen, there can't be a perception of the pen. Forget it. Okay? If there's no pen, there can't be a perception of the pen. So we say to them, well, then I guess you can't see a pew. Why do you say that? Because the pew's not there the way you thought it was. What's that got to do with it? If there's no object, there can't be no subject. There's no mind that sees the pew. Same as you said to us. Okay, that's how Madhyamika fights the mind only. All right, I'll do it one more time. Okay. How does... First we'll start with the mind only guy, okay? He's complaining to the Madhyamika guy. All right? You say things are unreal, right? Yeah, that's what we say. So, this pen is unreal, right? Yeah, that's what we say. Well, first of all, I think you're stupid, because it is real, I can write with it. Okay? That's not what we mean when we say unreal. When we say unreal, it means whether you can write with it or not, it looks to be existing from its side, but it's not. It exists because your karma is going off in your head and making you see it as a pen. Why so? Because any idiot can see that if a bug walks in here, or a dog, or a cat, or an aborigine from 200 years ago in Australia, all that they're going to see is a black and white stick. They're not going to see a pen. So pen is not coming from this thing. It's coming from your karma. Yeah, okay, sounds good, but I still think it's real because it can write, you know. Like he insists. Okay. So he says, how do you prove that the thing is an illusion? We see it's an illusion, stupid. Well, how do you see it's an illusion? We understand, we're standing at the pot, and suddenly we catch ourselves understanding that there's no pot out there, there's just some colors and shapes of a pot, and our mind is making us see a pot. So it's like an illusion. Oh, right. There's this real neat experience called Chö-cho, Jorlam Chö-cho, you know, last moments before you see emptiness directly, and you see that the pot is not real, right? Right. So, if the pot's not real, then the mind seeing it's not real either, right? Right, the mind is not real. Why is the understanding of the pot's nature not real, because it's also just forced on me by my past karma. Okay? It's not just coming up in my mind for no reason at all. I'm seeing my mind think like that because of my past karma. And that's why it's unreal. Okay? That's the illusion. Don't you guys accept any illusion? Be careful now, okay? It's going to get harder. Oh, we do have an illusion. We do accept some kind of illusion. Okay? Well, tell me about your kind of illusion. Is it the same as ours? No, we believe in a different kind of illusion. Okay? Well, what kind of illusion? Oh, we believe that that pew out there that John's sitting on is really being created by a seed which is in my mind, although it doesn't look that way. Okay? Tell me more. Well, the eye that's seeing that pew and the pew itself are coming from the very same karma. Okay? So why is that an illusion? Because if you just look at the pew, you're not going to stand there and think, oh, look, my mind is, a seed in my mind's going off and making that pew that John's sitting on. I'm glad that's doing that, or John would be on the floor, you know. Okay? Your mind doesn't think like that. Your mind just sees a pew. Your mind is not thinking, oh, that's a seed going off in my mind. And my eye is also a seed going off in my mind. And they're both coming from the same seed. Isn't it cool? You know, one karma is creating the chair and my eye to see the chair. That's cool. You don't think like that. You just look at a chair. So there's an illusion going on. The way it really is and the way it looks are different. So we also have an illusion. Okay, got it? Is the illusion real? No, it's not real. It's an illusion. So when I look at the chair, am I seeing something real or an illusion? You're seeing an illusion. So my mind that looks at the chair is not looking at anything real, right? Yeah, that's what I said. So that state of mind doesn't exist at all because it's looking at something that doesn't exist. Okay? You cannot have a mind without it something for it to see. Okay? There's no such thing in the universe, okay? You cannot have an eye consciousness. You can't be aware of any colors and shapes if there's no colors and shapes. So if there's no pew out there that's really a pew, how can you ever understand that? How can you ever see a pew? You guys are as crazy as we are. All right, that's the basic argument. Is it more comfortable? Questions? Yeah. Yeah, according to the mind-only school. You could say that also, but that's not what they emphasize. They emphasize that if the pew is unreal, then how could you have a subject mind that's holding it? Because unreal things don't exist.
Could that mind hold something else other
than that? Sure.
But everything.
Yeah. 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 Okay. If the mind was standing here and saying, oh, look, John's sitting on a pew that's created by my own karmas, which is also creating my eyeball, that exists. That pew exists. But that's not what that mind is thinking. That mind is thinking, John's sitting on a pew, which is created by wood, paint, factory, anything but my own karma. Okay? And that pew doesn't exist. So what is your mind seeing? You guys are as bad as us. Okay? Yeah, Madhyamika is arguing back to the mind-only school. You were making this complaint to us. Well, we make it to you. How did you ever see something that was an illusion? Because it doesn't even exist. So how could that state of mind exist? Okay. By the way, what does the Madhyamika really say about illusions? You can watch a movie. Come on, you can enjoy 7 years in Tibet. It functions. You eat popcorn, you drink Coke, and you feel nice. You know, you're seeing this very compassionate little Dalai Lama guy, and everything is really cool, you know. You can have emotions from a movie. You can watch a movie. You can enjoy a movie. As long as you don't... No, as long as you don't rip it apart and say, oh, look, you can see the frames going. It's not really Tibet. It's Argentina. I know that guy. He's the, you know... he's the waiter at Samba restaurant, you know. You know, he's not His Holiness's attendant, you know. I mean... That's Matak Machepa. If you leave it alone, You can live in the world. We talked about the taxi and all that, you know. But if you start investigating what's its real nature, it's no fun anymore, you know. It won't be a movie anymore. Can you watch a movie? Yes. Does a movie function? Of course it entertains you. Is a movie real? No. Okay? That doesn't mean you can't watch it. Okay? That's how Madhyamika would respond. Can a movie function to make you feel entertained and happy? Of course. Is it an illusion? Yes. Do illusions function? Yes. No problem. Can you stand out in front of an illusory New York City taxi cab barreling down the street and it'll break your illusory legs? Yes. You know, is it real in the way that you thought it was? Should you get angry at the taxi driver? No. Who broke your legs? You broke your legs. Okay. You made the taxi. Where did you think it came from? Some sadistic creator god? We wiped him out in the last class, right? Okay. Where did you think the taxi came from? You know? Oh, it's just random? You know, it's bad luck that you were walking across the street? It's just random that some people get hit and some people don't get hit? Come on. You know? Everything has a cause. There's a cause for breaking your leg, and there's a reason why you stepped off the curb at that moment. Okay? Everything has a cause. Be a scientist. Don't be a voodooist. You know? Okay? Yeah. They didn't win yet, really. Okay? All they said was that if you're complaining to us that if everything's an illusion, then no state of mind is for real either. Well, we can say the same thing to you. You know? Jim said, why can you say that a mind can't exist without an object? In Buddhist perceptual theory, the object actually precedes the mind and helps create the state of mind which perceives it. The object triggers the awareness of the object. Okay? The object helps create the awareness of the object. Until you have a banana, you can't have a perception of a banana. A banana comes a millisecond before the awareness of a banana, and it's always like that. According to Buddhism, the object helps create the perception which is perceiving it by being there to be perceived, and it triggers the awareness of the banana. Okay? That's... I'm sorry, what again? It can... by the way, the whole point of talking about illusion is that a very good picture of a banana or a very good wax banana from a distance can make your stomach growl. Yeah. Can it fill your stomach? No. And the whole point of emptiness theory is that even though all those things have none of the existence you think they have, you still struggle to get the things you want. You still struggle to avoid the things you don't like. And you still hurt people to do that. And then you're going to have more problems. Okay? They're not real. And the way you relate to them is false also. You know, you're going to sue the taxi driver. You should sue yourself. Okay? You're the one who created the bad karma. You know, you're the one who created the taxi driver. You know, a real good Buddhist should sue themselves at that point. Okay? Yeah. Would they disagree to the fact of the illusion? No, right? The fact of the illusion is a reality. The fact that the 7 years in Tibet is not real is itself a kind of reality, right? It is a kind of truth. It's true that that movie is not real. Now, would they have a problem with that? But don't forget that Madhyamika said that every state of mind is mistaken. And they also said that every perception of an external object is mistaken. Okay? Mistaken.
Yeah.
We're about to come to that. You're right in a way. It's coming. Okay. Another question? You can say that. Yeah. This pen exists as a conceptualization of the mind. It does not exist out there on its own without that conceptualization. You can say that. Yeah. That's the Madhyamika viewpoint. Oh, they don't even talk about it. You see, their idea of illusion is something totally different. And by the way, according to them, emptiness would be what? What would ultimate truth be? What would the real truth be about the pew in my eyes? Well, let's make it easier. According to them, what would dependent origination be? That pew and my eyes come from the same karmic seed. What would emptiness be? Nothing is any other way. Okay, in their system, what would be dependent origination? The fact that pew and my mind depend on one karmic seed for their existence. That's dependent origination. And emptiness is always the opposite, right? What is emptiness? It's the fact that nothing ever comes any other way. Okay? Very subtle. Okay? Any other way. Double negative. There ain't nothing that don't happen that way. Okay? Seriously. That's the emptiness. There ain't nothing that don't happen that way. That's emptiness, according to their school. After class. After class. No, because I'm going to go till 10, and I don't want to make these people to suffer more. Okay? Not really. 9:30, probably. Yeah. Okay. When I'm like this, I'm a mind only. When I'm like this, I'm a Madhyamika. Okay? Middle way. Okay? So, hey, do you guys have any idea of what dependent origination is? Of course. We're Buddhists, aren't we? What is dependent origination? Oh, it's the fact that pew that John's sitting on and my eyeballs and my eye consciousness are produced by the same karmic seed. They depend for their originating on the same karmic seed. Oh, that's your idea of dependent origination, right? Yeah. Duh. Yeah, in Tibetan. So what do you think emptiness is? It's the opposite of that, right? Right. Well, what would that be like? It's not true that any pew could ever exist any other way. Double negative, okay? There ain't no pew that's any other way, and that's the emptiness of the pew. Okay? In their system. Okay? Got it? Well, how about you guys? What's dependent origination in your system? You know, like they're met on a subway somewhere, right? Oh, we got our own dependent origination. Oh, what's that like? Now, this is the real one, right? This is the system of the Buddha, Nagarjuna, Tsongkhapa, Ken Rinpoche, the Dalai Lama, everybody else, okay? This is the real system. Oh, dependent origination means the existence of this pen depends on karma forcing me to organize that black and white color into a pen. The pen has originated depending on my perception of it as a pen, which is forced on me by my past karma. Oh, well then, what is emptiness according to you guys? Oh, we got emptiness. It's the fact that the pen is empty of any other way of existing. The pen is devoid of any other way of existing. The pen ain't got no any other way of existing. That's its emptiness. Emptiness is always negative. Emptiness is an absence of something. Okay? Everyone sufficiently confused? All right. I think we better take a break. All right, take like a 10-minute break and come back. Okay? Through the homework questions one by one, okay? Number one, summarize the argument of the mind-only school when they object to the position of the middle-way school about deceptive and ultimate truth or deceptive and ultimate reality, right? And the answer is, if you Madhyamika guys say that nothing has any nature of its own, then the mind that sees things can't exist either, because it doesn't have any nature of its own. They think if it has no nature of its own, it doesn't exist. Is that true? No. Does the pen have a nature of its own? No. Does it really exist? Yes. Can you use it to write? Yes. Okay, so already they're in trouble. But they say, wrongly, if you Madhyamika guys say that the mind which sees things doesn't exist, is an illusion, then it doesn't exist. If that mind didn't exist, there would be no subject that it saw. And then nothing would be anything. Okay, so you're wrong. Okay, basically they're back in their same old problem of thinking that if something doesn't have its own nature, it cannot exist at all. But that's not true. The pen doesn't have its own nature. Its nature is coming from where? Your mind. Why? Why did you choose pen and not stick? Your karma is forcing you to see it. Was it good karma or bad karma? Depends how you feel about this class, okay? Seriously. I mean, some people in this class could be cursing this pen right now. In that case, it's a bad karma, okay? If you like this class, then you're saying, oh, that pen is it's a good karma. Okay, but either way, it's a karma. And in that sense, the pen is an illusion. It doesn't look like it's coming from your karma, but it is. Okay? So I'll say the answer one more time. Mind-only school is complaining to the Madhyamika school. How can you know anything? Because your mind is an illusion also. It doesn't have any nature of its own. So it can't work, they think. If it can't work, how can you ever talk about any illusion? Because who could see the illusion? Okay. Who could see the illusion? If your mind is an illusion, it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, how can it see an illusion? Can't be any illusion. Okay. So you could never know. You could never have that experience of the pot on the stove. Because the mind that has that experience is an illusion also. And it doesn't exist and it doesn't work and it's not seeing anything at all. Which is not what we said in the first place, but this is what they're complaining about. Okay. Now let's get them back. How? Let's use the same gun that they used to shoot us to shoot them. Okay, what's that? Question number two. This is also on the quiz. How does the middle way school answer this objection? They say, look, your same argument applies to yourself. Do you guys believe in any illusion? They say, we do. What's your illusion like? That chair and my eyes look like they are separate things, and that there's no connection between them in particular, except that I'm watching the chair. But in reality, they are both created by the same karma. I helped somebody put their rear end on a chair in my past life. And that's creating that chair, and that's creating my eye at the same time. Okay? But it doesn't look that way, so there's an illusion going on. So then we say, when you look at the chair, then, you don't really see what you thought you saw, right? They say, right. So, the perception of a chair doesn't exist, right? Why do you say that? Because the thing it's looking at is not there. You're the same, you're just as bad as we are. Don't complain to us. You got the same idea running around in your head. You think that things are an illusion, and therefore nothing could see it, because illusions are not real. So the state of mind seeing the illusion is also unreal. It's not true. Okay. When you went into the movie theater, Sony Theater on 11th and 2nd, 3rd, okay, did you see Tibet and His Holiness the Dalai Lama? No. So was there a state of mind which was perceiving Tibet and His Holiness the Dalai Lama? No. Was there a state of mind perceiving the illusion of Tibet and the illusion of His Holiness? Yes. That's all. Okay? There's no state of mind which is perceiving Tibet and the real Dalai Lama because they weren't in the Sony Theater. So that subject mind cannot be there. That's all. Okay? Don't get confused. Don't worry about it. All right? There cannot be a perception of a pew according to you, because there's no pew there. It's just a piece of your mind that looks like a pew. All right? How's that? Okay. Did the Dalai Lama and Tibet go to the Sony Theater last week? No. Did you have a perception of His Holiness and Tibet? No. Did you have a perception of something that looked like His Holiness and looked like Tibet? Yes. Is that an illusion? Yes. Did it function? Yes, I had a good time. It made me laugh. It made me cry. You know. So can illusions function? Yes. Is the pen illusory? Yes. Can I still write with it? Yes. Okay, no problem. Okay? Easy. Okay. Question number three. The graders are going to have a really good time on these two questions. Okay. Be liberal. I hardly understand it myself. Number three. State the meaning of illusion. What's the essence of an illusion? By the way, Tibetan people have to do it in Tibetan, try it. Nangsul dan nechul mi timba. The way it looks and the way it is ain't the same. Okay? The way it looks to be and the way it really is not the same. Why? It looks as if it's a pen out there in my hand. But what's it really? It's my mind organizing some colors and shapes. Why is my mind choosing to make it a pen? My karma. Because of my karma is forcing me to do that. What the hell has that got to do with my happiness? Hey, if you could collect only good karmas, you'd be only having good objects in your life. Everybody in New York City would be friendly to you. Every subway would run on time. There wouldn't be any garbage in the street. Okay? And if you really worked on it, it would all be a Buddha paradise. Okay? That's the point. You wouldn't even have to die. The Buddha didn't say, I'll make you feel good. The Buddha said, I will protect you and I will save you from death, old age, and sickness. You can do it because things are empty. That's what it's got to do with your life. Why should you listen up here to some guy discussing two schools that's 1,300 years ago arguing about some stupid thing? This just seems to be, you know, philosophy, plain old stuff. It's not like that. If you get it, you can not die, okay? And that would be nice. I think everybody in this room would like to do that and not get old and not get stupid and not get blind and everything, okay? That's the point. Not just fooling around. These are very important questions. By thinking about these points, you will see emptiness faster. Okay? That's the whole point. 20 minutes with good old emptiness, you're out of here. Alright? Seriously, the definition of ultimate reality. I'm not kidding, and I'm not being facetious. This is why we're talking about this stuff. Master Shantideva, who spent hundreds of pages teaching you about patience, kindness, compassion, morality, concentration, giving, he's not going to waste your time at the end of the book. Okay? There's some connection between this stuff. Okay? Alright. Question number four. Oh, by the way, question number three also says, what, according to the mind-only school, is like an illusion? It's me, John's pew, and my eyeball, right? How do we say it in Tibetan? Here you go. I say it up till four. You guys can get this stamp later, I think. Okay. Say suk, dang, suktin. Gi, Sema, Ze, Shenki, Tupa. It's like a mantra in the monastery. When you get to the mind-only school, this is like a mantra. You debate for it day after day after day. You debate and you use this. Sukta, Sukzingi, Zema, Ze, Shenki, Tonga, Ze, Shenki, Tupa. Like that. It just becomes like a mantra. This is the belief of the mind-only school about the illusion. That pew and my eyes seem to be coming from separate causes. But that's not true. That's just an illusion. They are coming from the same cause. What? I was nice to somebody who needed a place to sit in my past life. That created my eyes to see that chair, and it's creating the chair itself. One seed, one cause, is creating both. The illusion is that it seems to be that they're coming. It seems to be that my mommy and my daddy and the Cheerios I eat every morning are creating my eye, and some factory made that chair. Is that true? Yes. Why did I eat the Cheerios? Why did I have those mommy and daddy? Why did the factory make the chair? They were created by one karmic seed, okay, in my mind. Okay? It's kind of cool. Yeah. Once they ripen to the Jim asked, once that seed ripens, do those two things happen independently? We would say that they are independent of each other, but in the sense that they both depend on the cause, they're not independent. But after they've ripened, and the seed has what? By definition, disappeared. They do exist as separate objects. Okay. But the mind only school would say that is not an external object. They don't like the word external. Okay. They would also say that. By the way, I'm surprised nobody brought it up yet. When we got to this point in the monastery, I interrupted my teacher for the one and only time in 18 years. Okay? It's the only time I ever interrupted him. And I said, what's the problem with that? Sounds great to me. You know? How come we don't accept that? It sounds great to me. Isn't it true that my entire world and everything about me which is experiencing it have come from my karma? You know? What's wrong with the mind-only school? He says, you got it. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay? Then what's the problem with the mind-only school? They think there's a separate part of your brain where those seeds have to stay, and that's not true. But the principle is right. No problem. Okay? Is that the ultimate meaning of emptiness? Pretty close. Okay? So don't think it's a stupid idea. It's a great idea. And you should have objected by now. Okay, anyway. Yeah. Yeah. The whole problem of the mind-only presentation stems from their belief that the seeds itself and the mind itself is self-existent. But that's not why we're here tonight. We're not going to talk about that tonight. Yeah. Oh, okay, he says, if there's a homeless person outside my house and I help them with some money to get food, am I interfering with any karma or anything like that? She created karma, which is forcing her to see you give her money. You created karma, which is giving you the predilection or the enjoyment of giving charity to other people. And so they're both a result of karma. And if at the last minute you decide not to, or if the coin drops into a grating and she can't reach it, then her good karma has just shifted to a bad karma. The good karma has worn out. It's like the tea that burned your hand. Okay? So everything is within the laws of karma. Nothing breaks the laws of karma, ever. Okay? Okay. So I think that covers question number... That's the illusion according to the mind-only school. Okay? Now, in the mind-only school, how do you catch yourself seeing the illusion? By the way, our tradition is Dalai Lama's tradition, Gelugpa. When we get to the hard part, we slow down and we spend more time on it. I mean, that's our tradition. I'm not saying the other schools don't, but I'm saying we really enjoy it. So we're going to slow down and cover this carefully. All right? Say, Rangrik. Rangrik. Roll the R, even though I can't do it so well. Rang Rik. Okay. Rang means myself, self. Rik means to know. Rang Rik means self-perception of the mind. They're going to get to the point of asking us, how do you... You had this state of mind that was watching the pot. You caught the illusion. Finally, after countless lifetimes, you caught yourself in the act of watching an illusion. But how did you do that if the mind itself is an illusion? How can a screwy state of mind catch a screwy state of affairs? Okay? And we say, well, how about you? Well, how do you think you're going to catch your illusion? Ah, we got something. Rang Rig. Okay? The mind sees itself. The mind watches itself. Self-awareness. Okay? When I am looking... I got it. It's okay. When I'm looking at the color blue, for example, there's a part of my mind which is watching myself see the color blue. Got it? When I see blue, when I see something blue, there's two states of mind going on in my mind at the same time. Half my mind is perceiving blue. The other half of my mind is watching myself perceiving blue. Got it? Okay. The second one is called Rangjing, the mind watching itself. Okay, they say, very conveniently, the mind separates into two parts. One part is watching the pew. The other part is watching myself watch the pew. Prove it. I can remember myself watching the pew. All right? Got it? I'll go through it again. Maybe this is too much for one class. Anyway, mind-only school. How do you catch yourself seeing the illusion? The way you catch yourself doing anything else. Well, how's that? There's two parts of your mind going on at the same time all the time. When you're watching the pew, there's another part of your mind watching you watching the pew. Okay? Prove it. Hey, tomorrow morning, you're going to remember that you saw the pew. Well, you're also going to remember that it was you seeing the pew. So you must have had an awareness of yourself. You must have been aware of yourself watching the pew. Because the next morning you remember that you were watching the pew. You say what? I saw the pew. How did you know I was there? Because part of your mind was watching I, and part of your mind was watching the pew. They say. Okay? Is this true? No. Okay, we'll get into why not. All right? I think we kind of believe this in America also. All right? They believe that that little part of your mind that's watching yourself watch the pew is called rangvig. Knowledge of itself. The mind's knowledge of itself in the moment, in the present moment. It's not a memory. It's a simultaneous awareness of the chair and awareness of the awareness of the chair. Got it? Everyone's asleep. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think therefore I am. Okay. Yeah. They're just now, each school is getting into the question of how do you catch yourself watching the illusion? That's all. Okay. Well, for them, illusion only refers to outside things, things that look to be outside. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do talk about, Nancy said, well, what about like when you're watching your morality? You're keeping your book every 2 hours. And then there's this back of the mind, there's this awareness of what am I doing? What am I saying? What am I thinking? According to Madhyamika, those would be alternating. They would not be going on at the same time. Okay? Alternating quickly in the case of an ethical person. Alternating very slowly in the case of other people. 10 minutes later, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Okay? By the way, that's the point of Tundruk, and that's the point of your book, is to lower the time gap down to zero. You don't say the bad thing as you're trying to say it. You get kind of schizophrenic if you're a good Buddhist. You know, like, you know, trying to search for something good to say. Okay? All right. So what state of, now question number 4, what state of mind according to the mind-only school confirms the existence of your seeing the illusion, and in fact every state of mind? Oh, it's rangrig. It's that mind that watches the mind. Okay. Since it's early tonight in the night, I'll give you the full philosophical definition of rangrig. Okay. This is also a mantra in the monastery. This happens to be the answer to question 7. And we're almost done, right? Ka nang konala We have to memorize this at the winter debates over and over again, so. By the way, this class is for fanatics, okay? I gave you 2 easy classes this year. Now you get one real one, okay? Did everybody see G.I. Jane? That was an assignment, right? Don't ring the bell, okay? Ring the bell means I chicken out. I'm going to go to the Friday night class. You know? I think I'll switch over to English track. Yeah. Be a tough guy, okay? The more pain, the more you gain, right? Really, this is not unimportant. This is your death we're talking about. Okay? You got to put some effort into it. I'm trying to force you to put some time into it. Okay? Somebody asked me today, should I sleep, meditate, or prepare for the quiz? And my answer was, all three. Yeah. Not at all. Not at all. Okay? Very typical in Buddhism. You can use someone else's screwy logic to screw up their logic. Okay? No problem. It's called Rigpa Gotsung. It's a logical method. It's a recognized method. As long as they accept it, it's legal. Okay? The test of trueness in Buddhist logic is not so much reality. It's what does the opponent, what will the opponent accept? You see what I mean? It's a long story. Okay. Say Kanang. By the way, in the spring, February, we're gonna do a class on Buddhist logic and we're gonna debate. Half the class will be debating in English or in Tibetan, but we're gonna break up into small circles like in the monastery. Half the class, and we'll just go at it. It's a lot of fun. You know, you saw that guy dancing in Time magazine, right? That was really a debate, okay? It's a lot of fun, and you learn like a rocket ship. You can learn 10 times faster, and you learn how to debate a question, and then forever after, you can pick any question you want and decide it quickly. And you also become very stubborn, okay? Because you can defend anything, whether it's logical or not. Okay. As those people who work with me know. Okay. Ka nang konala chok. Say ka nang konala chok. Ka nang konala chok means, ka nang means inwardly. Okay. It faces inward. It's introspective. Ka nang. Kona. It only faces inwardly. It never checks out the pew. It's never looking at the pew. It's always looking at what? Me looking at the pew. Okay? This is the definition of the self-perception of the mind. Okay? The first quality is that it's always turned inwards. Kanang only. Kanang konala. Chok means to be directed inwards. So it's always inwardly directed. Kanang konala chok shing. Shing here means and. Ninang tam che dang dawa. Say ninang tam che dang dawa. Ninang means duality. Duality. A sense of two separate things. Okay? A sense of two separate things. In Buddhism, that has different meanings. Okay? Tonight, it's going to mean a separate knower and a separate knowee. Tonight, two separate things is going to refer to a separate knower and a separate thing known. Okay? The knower and the known. The knower and the thing it knows. How's that? Okay? Here, in this case, in this definition, which is not always the case, duality means a separate knower and a separate thing which is known. Tam che means all of those. Tang Telwei is an idiom meaning it ain't got those things. It doesn't have those things. There is no sense of duality. There is no sense of I am knowing or I am known. Okay? There can't be. This is a very convenient part of the definition for the mind-only school. They're lucky they threw this in. Because otherwise they're in big trouble. Why? How could the mind at one moment be knowing itself and be knowing itself? It's like this fireside theater thing back in the... I'm not going to say the year. You know, how can you be in two places at once when you're nowhere at all, right? So how can you be the thing that's out there that you're knowing and simultaneously be the guy who's looking at the thing? It's stupid. It's impossible. They say, oh... There's no, it's all like void at that time. You know, forget the distinction between the person who's knowing and the thing that's knowing. Okay? How could your mind split into two parts and half of it is looking at the other half while the other half is looking at the pew? Come on. You're either a knower or the thing that's known, but you can't be both at the same time. Okay? They say, oh, it's all those, it's neither. All duality is gone. Okay? They have to say that. Okay. By the way, the Buddha then says, this is question number 5. The Buddha complains about the mind-only school. Who invented the mind-only school? Okay. Anyway, He takes a knife. He said he holds up a knife. Imagine this is a knife, okay? Do you have karma to imagine it as a knife? Yes. Okay. Imagine it as a knife. This is the blade of the knife, right? Can the blade of the knife cut itself? You know, like, when you're using a knife, do you have to be careful not to cut the knife? It's crazy. It's stupid. The Buddha said, your rangrik is the same. How can the mind see itself while it's seeing itself? While it's seeing something else? How can the mind be the thing which is seen and the thing which is seeing at the same time? That's like you have to be careful while you cut bread because you might cut the knife. Okay? This is silly. It's impossible. Okay? By the way, that's the answer to number 5. The Buddha said, the mind is the same as the blade of a sword which could never cut itself. Direct quotation from the Buddha, and Master Shantideva rips it off and puts it in his book. Okay? Okay. How could a knife be in danger of cutting the knife? How could the mind watch the mind and be the thing watched by the mind at the same time? It's impossible. Okay? Yeah.
Would they come back and say this exactly what happens when you have the situation?
Why?
When you see the separate reality, you know it's not
No. Okay. All right. Yeah. I will. When we finish, I'll give you the gist of the whole thing. Tabche Dajawi, we're up to Dzinam, okay? Dzinam means it's a subject. It's in the subject mode as opposed to the object mode, okay? Can your mind ever be in the object mode? Can your mind ever be the object of another state of mind? Yeah. When? When the Buddha reads your mind. Okay? When the Buddha is reading your mind is in object mode. Dzinam means subject mode. Self-perception of the mind is always in subject mode. Dzinam means subject mode. Okay. If there's anyone I didn't lose yet, please raise your hand. No? Okay. All right. Yengarwa. Say Yengarwa. Yengarwa means it's a whole separate compartment of your mind. Yengarwa means isolated, separate. It's a very rare word, okay? Yengarwa means separate. So I'm going to wrap it up for you. In a nutshell, their idea of self-perception. Why are they talking about self-perception? Why did this come up? Who can catch yourself seeing the illusion? You know, when you're seeing the illusion, how do you know you're doing it? If your mind is illusory also. Okay? Oh, there's this other part of your mind. Oh, what's it like? It's Yengarwa. It's a separate part of your mind, which is always only a subject. It doesn't have any quality of being the thing which knows or the thing which is known. All of those distinctions are gone at that moment. And it's only focusing upon the mind itself. It's only focusing inwardly. And we call that thing the self-perception of the mind. In psychology, it's called apperception, if you care. Okay? Right. Got it? Okay, one more time. The mind only has to come up with this stupid idea that's not real because they have to explain how do you catch yourself in the illusion. Is that important? Goddamn, yes, it is. You have to catch yourself about an hour before you see emptiness directly. You must be able to catch yourself seeing the illusion. You must catch yourself making a mental pot where there's only a few colors and shapes. You must be able to see dependent origination. That is dependent origination. You catch yourself doing it, and then about an hour later you see emptiness directly. About an hour after that, you never have to worry about suffering in any major way for the rest of your existence. That's pretty cool. What's it like? Okay, they say the state of mind that catches the illusion is a separate part of your mind. It's a subject part of the mind. There's no distinction there anymore of someone who's knowing or someone who's known. And it's only focused inwardly. It's only watching what? The mind watching the chair. Okay? Does it ever focus on the chair? No, it's only inwardly focusing. Can it distinguish between the thing known and the thing knowing? It better not, or you're going to have some kind of real schizophrenia. Okay? Because it happens to be two opposite things at the same time. Let's drop that. Okay? Where is it located? Separate compartment in your mind. Okay? All right? That's their definition. Let's see if we got anything else. Last thing, almost. Hey. So here, we got this debate again. Who's over here? Mind only. Who's over here? Middle way. Okay. Mind only says, well, you explain how you remember that you saw the pew. What do you say, Mr. Majumika, the next morning? Just tell me what you say. We say, I saw the pew. Aha! You say pew and you say I, right? Right. So you must have had an awareness of the pew, and you must have had an awareness of I, because you say two things. You say, I saw the pew. Right. So at the moment that you saw the pew, you must have been aware of your mind, right? Not necessarily. Well, we say you are. We say there's this thing called self-perception of the mind. And that's why the next morning you can say, I saw the pew, because the same mind at the same moment is seeing the pew and watching you see the pew, and that's proven by the next morning. You can say, I saw the pew. You can remember I, and you can remember pew. And if there hadn't been one state of mind catching both of them at the same time, how could you say I saw the pew? We have a different explanation. Okay? What's that? You don't remember the example of the rat? Okay? Okay? This is called the example of the rat bite. It's very famous in Majjhimika philosophy. Okay? What's the example? There's a bear hibernating. I don't know where they hibernate. Some cave, I guess. Okay? And he's in a state of like half asleep. It's winter time. Okay? He's in hibernation. Okay? Some mouse comes up and bites him on the butt. Okay? Okay? And he like turns over in his sleep. He's like, ouch, you know, and he turns over. Okay? But he doesn't wake up. Right? Then according to Tibetan and Indian philosophy, springtime comes with its April showers. And what happens? There's thunder. Okay? And there's this big boom of thunder. And the bear goes, whoa, what was that? And he wakes up. The thunder wakes him up. Okay? It's called Drukja Tirba. He hears the thunder and he wakes up. And then he goes, what? Ouch, man, what was that? You know, and he remembers, you know, rolling over. Like, I remember some kind of sharp pain, December. It was around Christmas time, you know. And I got this sharp pain in my butt, and I rolled over, and I didn't quite wake up, you know. And then he looks, and it's all infected. He sees this pus, okay. And he says, uh-oh, that rat must have had rabies, or something like that, okay. That rat must have had, they called Chiwe du. It means there's some kind of poison in the rat's mouth. Okay, it must have had call it rabies. Okay, he must have had rabies, because now look, it's all infected. It's not just like a scar. It's all pussy and everything else. Okay, this is how Master Shantideva and the great philosophers of India explain why I can say what I saw the pew. Okay, and there's five parts to this analogy. That's the homework question. Okay, there's five parts to the analogy. This explains why you can remember why something happened, and you can remember yourself in the event, even though there's no such thing as this idea of self-perception of the mind. By the way, to summarize, I'll give it to you easy and then we'll break it down into the parts. What'd you have for dinner? I mean, think of the thing you had for lunch or, you know, okay? I had, of course, the nectar of the gods. Two Boots pizza. Okay? I've been waiting. Okay? Was I in the pizza parlor? Yes. I ate pizza. Right? So I must have been in the pizza parlor. Why? According to the Madhyamika, because I remember the pizza. Okay? That's all. That's all you need. I remember the pizza. And it's a deduction and not a direct memory to say, Michael Roach must have been there. Okay, got it? The pizza I saw directly, but the Michael Roach I'm just assuming was there. Why? I remember the taste. Okay, this guy standing here remembers the taste. So this guy must have been there. Okay, was there a direct perception of me at that moment, at the very moment that I was focusing on the pizza? No, it's impossible. Okay, then how can you say you ate the pizza? Well, I remember the taste of the pizza. I must have been there. Okay. By the way, you can have this thought a millisecond after you bite the pizza, right? It's not like it has to be the next night or something like that. Okay. How do you prove that there was a mind there tasting pizza? Because I remember the taste of the pizza. So I must have been there. Okay. You don't have to say there's this half of your mind hanging over there that's watching your mind eat the pizza. Okay. You don't need that. All you have to say is, I remember the pizza. So I must have been there. Okay? It's just like the bear that got bit in the butt. Okay? Now, what is the full analogy? Here we go. Then you can wake up and go home. Okay. Being bitten by the rat is like eating the pizza. Okay? Being bitten by the rat is like eating the pizza. Okay. Did it happen this afternoon? Yes. Did it happen around Christmas? Yes. Okay, you got bit by the rat. The pizza got bit by me. Okay? All right. Did poison enter the body at the time that the rat bit the bear? Did some poison enter the body? Yes. That's an analogy for there must have been the fact that I have a nice full tummy now proves that I was there in the pizza parlor. How's that? Okay? The fact of the poison proves that there was somebody there. The fact of a full stomach now and the remembrance of the pizza proves that I was there. Okay? The fact that there's infection now proves that there was poison in the rat's mouth. Okay? Number three. Was the bear aware of the poison at Christmas time? That the poison was entering its body? No. Okay. Was there an experience of Michael Roach at the very moment I bit into the two bites, the two boots pizza? No. Okay. Same thing. All right. You're not aware of yourself at the very moment that you're focusing on that outside object. Okay. No, it's the fact that you cannot focus on two widely different things at the same moment. The human mind can't do that. It appears to do that because it, 65 seconds of perception, 65 moments of perception in that much time. It's actually alternating between objects. Okay. Remembering the bite later on, right? In April, he remembers, oh yeah, I remember that. Okay. It's like remembering the object later on. The original object. Okay, I remember the pizza. It's like remembering the bite. Okay, remembering the bite is like remembering the pizza. Okay, tasting the pizza, biting the pizza. Okay. And the fact that we understand that there was poison in the rat's mouth is what? A deduction. And I can also deduce that I must have been sitting in the pizza parlor. Okay? I can understand that I must have been there. So, the bear saying to himself, that rat must have had rabies when he bit me, is the same as me saying, I must have been in the pizza parlor. Because I remember the pizza. And he remembers the bite and he sees the later effects, the full tummy, nice feeling of the pizza. Okay. Wow. I think that's about it. Yeah, number four was remembering the bite later on is the same as remembering the experience of the pizza. Okay? You remembering the bite is an analogy for I remember biting into the pizza. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Especially, it's the theory of how can you remember the subject in a former perception. Yeah, you can say that. That's a deduction. That there, it is the same thing. Oh, deduction, you don't sit there all day and say, gee, I wonder if I was in that pizza parlor, you know? Like your mind calculates it instantly, right? I know I was in the Two Boots pizza parlor. Why? I can remember the Two Boots pizza. I must have been there. Okay, that's all. That's all. What's this got to do with my happiness? Okay? Okay? What's this got to do with my happiness? It's very important. How can I get to the point where I'm standing in front of the stove and I finally see, after countless lifetimes, that I am making that pot with my karma, you know? And now all things are possible. I can enter a Buddha paradise in this life. I can see tantric angels standing around me in this life if I'm good enough. Why? Because it's empty, okay? How do you prove it? How do you know it? When you remember seeing the real nature of the pot, you know you must have been there. Okay, that's all. Okay. Anyway, we're trying to get to that. Definitely the last thing. I covered all the questions except one. Okay. You don't have to write this. This is in your reading, okay? You don't have to worry about it. It's in your reading. Write the first few words and you'll know where it is, okay? Mar me sel. Okay? Mar me selma. It's a dying gasp of the mind-only school. By the way, after tonight you can say goodbye to them. They don't come back, okay? You can rejoice that by next class we'll be back on a normal subject. All right, and I promise we will, okay? No more heavy stuff, but I don't want to leave it out, you know? You should understand it, you should know it, okay? This is the hardest class, I think, of all the classes we've had in history, okay? So you can be proud that you made it through the class. Next class, it gets easier. And this is their dying gasp, okay? This is their final word on the subject, okay? They say, your mind is just like a lamp. Why? By the way, they're trying to defend what? Their last attempt to defend Rangrig. The idea that the mind could know itself at the very instant that it's knowing something else. That the mind could watch itself work. Watch who? Itself. And be the person being watched at the same time? Right. Oh, come on. You know, oh no, no, it's just like a butter lamp. Marme. Okay, see Marme? It's just like a butter lamp. What are you talking about? Oh, a butter lamp lights up all the things around it. Oh, we can handle that. Your mind sees the pew, right? I mean, you're talking about the mind seeing the pew. Right, right. The mind sees the pew in the same way that the light from a butter lamp lights up all the things in the room. Okay, we have no problem with that. And then they say something really stupid. But first, the lamp has to light up itself. Okay? Or else it would be dark, you know? Right? I mean, that electric bulb has to light up itself. It has to make itself light before it can light up all this stuff in this room. Okay? Why? Oh, you look at it, it's all lit up. Okay? Alright? They say, that's how Rangrig works. That's how the mind sees itself. First you have to see yourself, and then you can see other stuff. Okay? The mind in one moment is watching itself, and watching itself watch the other stuff at the same time. Okay? It's watching itself, and it's also seeing the pew at the same time. Why? Because a butter lamp lights up the whole room and itself. at the same time. Okay? No problem. Okay? So Madhyamika gives a really cute answer, okay? Finally you get something light, alright? They say, well, when you turn off the lights, it must be bright as hell in your room. Okay? And then the mind-only school says, what are you talking about? You know? And they say, well, you know, it's like this. First, darkness makes all the things dark. First, darkness covers up all the other stuff. That's all right. And then, according to you, it covers up itself, right? I guess. And then everything gets light because the darkness is covered, right? Got it? I'll do it one more time. We say there must be a mind that watches the mind while the mind looks at other stuff. That's really stupid. I mean, how could the mind be looking at itself and be the thing that it's looking at the same time? Oh, it's just like a butter lamp, you know? It lights up all the other stuff, but first it has to light up itself. Oh, great, I get it. So it's just like darkness, right? I don't know what you're talking about. Well, darkness covers up everything else first, right? Yeah, that's right. And then it covers itself up, right? Well, I guess you're right. And since the darkness is all covered up, everything's light, right? Okay? It's like a joke. Get it? Okay. By the way, that joke was used by somebody named Nagarjuna in his Root Wisdom, in his most famous book, okay? The Arya Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna, the being who saw emptiness directly, uses that example to defeat this idea, okay? So what's the whole point? To summarize, and then you can go home. The point is that there will come a day, just before you see emptiness directly, that you catch yourself watching the illusion. Okay? Is the state of mind that catches yourself watching the illusion also an illusion? Yes? So how can it be valid? How can it be true? How do you know what you're seeing is right if that mind is screwy? That's not what screwy means. Okay? Well, what does screwy mean? It doesn't mean it doesn't work, right? Screwy means it looks like it's not your projection, but it is your projection. That's all. Got it? Okay? So an illusory mind can recognize illusions. No problem. Okay? Your mind, which is an illusion, can catch yourself in a world of illusion. Okay? No problem. Why? Because illusion doesn't mean screwy. It just means that state of mind also is a projection of yours. Where did it come from? Your karma. What kind of karma? Countless years of good karma. To have that 1 minute of perception. You know, countless good deeds. Helping thousands and thousands and thousands of people. You know, being good for entire lifetimes. And then maybe you'll have this 2 minute perception of yourself watching the illusion. Okay? Is that a projection? Yes. Is it like an illusion? Yes. Is it dysfunctional, wrong, inaccurate, screwed up? No, that's not what illusion means. Don't think like that. That's the bottom line. Okay? Did you have a question? Loud. Yeah, good question. So Elizabeth said, okay, you catch yourself doing an illusion thing, an illusion trip with the pot, right? Yeah, you do. In the next moment, could that same state of mind focus on itself of the moment before, please? Okay? And say, oh, my mind was also an illusion at that point. Yeah, it could. But only focusing on the mind of the moment before. Not focusing on itself. Because you can't stand here and look at John and then be John at the same moment. Okay? You can't be the looky and the looker at the same time. That's crazy. But yeah, you could focus on the mind of the previous moment. Do you happen to do that? No. Okay? But you could. All right? Okay. Anybody still awake? All right, one more. Yeah, Eric said, when you're having a direct perception of emptiness, how does your mind know this is not an illusion? It can only know it in an illusory way about 10 minutes after you finish seeing emptiness directly. Okay? Because while you're seeing emptiness directly, you cannot be focusing on an illusion. Why? Because the meaning of an illusion is the way it looks and the way it is are not the same. But when you're focusing on emptiness, it's the first and the only time that the way it looks and the way it is exactly the same. Okay? There's no illusion there. Okay? But it happens to be an illusory state of mind that remembers that. Okay? Oh, you sure? You gotta make these, torture these poor people? Okay, one more question. Then we're gonna leave the mind only, okay? You can like, take the mind only and throw them in the river, you know? Yeah. Yeah, good. Go ahead. Okay, yeah. All right. He asked like this. So, you see emptiness directly, and you come down out of it, and then you're aware that the way you're now seeing things is an illusion, that it's wrong. You know that you're wrong. So what's to say that a year from now, from then, after seeing emptiness directly, you're not going to have some better perception that maybe that was wrong, okay? Something like that, that that was an illusion. It's like a dream within a dream, right? So you wake up from one dream in your dream, but you're still in the dream, but you thought you woke up in the dream, and you did wake up from the dream, but you're still dreaming because you're in another dream. Okay, something like that. And how do we know the dreams aren't endless? Ultimate truth is ultimate reality. Ultimate is ultimate, period. The day you see it, you know there's nothing else. It's a direct, absolute, sema. Pramana means inviolable perception. You know it is ultimate reality, and there is no higher reality than that. And you perceive that. You perceive that fact directly. Okay. And it cannot be disproven by any other state of consciousness. And you see that directly. Also, incidentally, until you get there, the Buddha said, there's no more illusions after that. I mean, that is ultimate reality. Ultimate means ultimate. Ultimate means nothing higher than, really, honestly. The day you see it, you won't ask this question. You won't ask this question. You see everything directly, period. You know, you see your future lives, see emptiness, you know you saw emptiness, you see the day of your enlightenment, and you see that that's the ultimate way of being. And there's nothing else to do, really. Oh, it's fine, it's all right, no problem. Sure, Sky? Okay, let's go for real suffering here. What's a practical application for this thing? You know, what's a practical application for this thing? Frankly, you have to be very careful, okay? Seriously. We're not allowed to teach, and I have not taught you, the final steps of this analysis in public. I mean, you teach it to people privately, honestly. Okay, like what we did last Friday was cool, but there's still a few more steps to that, you know? And you can't fool around with it. It's very, very inappropriate because you might get some weird idea and then you might break your morality or something like that, you know.
Gewa di gewa kru, sanam yeshe
This is the end of Class 3. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.